This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geek, show number 648 with TJ Huddleston, recorded on May 29th, 2025. Here on Home Gadget Geeks, we cover all the favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home. News, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Carlson, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in a beautiful Bellevue, Nebraska. Just a string of some really good weather, and we'll talk a little bit about the weather, maybe a little gardening with TJ tonight, and we'll post those with some world-class show notes out at TheAverageGuy.tv. Big thanks to our Patreon subscribers. If you're on the team and you support us every month, thank you. You can jump on that team if you want to, TheAverageGuy.tv/Patreon. We just have one plan, make it simple, $5 a month. Could join for 1 month or as many as you want. Many of you have been on for a long time. Thank you for being a Patreon supporter. And then, of course, if you want to use the Amazon affiliate link posted in the upper right-hand corner at theaverageguy.tv, just click through the link. You'll see it there. And go shopping, and all that benefits the network. So we appreciate when you do that as well. Big thanks to Doug Milburn, who joined me last week. That was actually behind the scenes, a Monday morning 8 a.m. recording that I did with Doug. And I have to do it. Little retraction. I think the whole time I was saying 5 1/4 for the drive size. It's 3.5. Like I've only been doing this for 1,000 years. I only have, 100 terabytes of storage down here. And yet the entire interview, I said 5 1/4. I don't know why. So I feel like an idiot. I apologize. 3.5-inch drives is what we were talking about. So corrections have been made. You heard them in the background. TJ's hanging out with me tonight. TJ, welcome to Home Gadget Geeks.
Hey, always happy to be here. Thanks for having me on. I always have to follow Gavin, right? You know, he's always on the podcast, I would say quarterly at this point, maybe a couple times like a year at least. And I feel like I have to follow up after him. So,
well, you got to clean here. Up. You got to clean up for him. I mean, it kind of leaves it a little bit of a mess.
He always gets so nerdy with everything. I'm just like, is it too nerdy, you know? No, I always love hearing his stuff. He's always got crazy stuff going on. So
he does. I don't know how he finds time for it all.
As a professional like home automation person too, the stuff he's doing with his home automation system is stuff that we did, and it required like very expensive equipment. And he's doing it with relatively affordable equipment. So it's always crazy to hear his developments.
Yeah, the home automation space has really gotten, this is one of the weird things to say, it's gotten relatively cheaper than it used to be, I think. I think the equipment has gotten relatively worse, though, in the process. Like, I don't know, maybe you've been doing this for a long time. I think the consumer grade stuff that we get at Menards or Home Depot or Lowe's or buy it on Amazon seems to be a little worse for me than it has maybe the professional stuff you were buying 10 years ago or 8 years ago.
I would agree with that. I think overall it's honestly just too complicated. It's kind of like buying a Wi-Fi router. Right. If you go out and you need a Wi-Fi system or a Wi-Fi router or even a TV, have you bought a TV recently? Yeah. There's just way too many options. And like, how is the normal like average person going to decide what option they are actually going to pick and what's going to be a good option? And so I think just like a lot of other technology, there's just so many different options. And unfortunately, half of them are not good. And so you really have to research what you're going to buy.
Well, we've fallen into the trap of cheap, right? So you can get a TV. I got a 32-inch TV 2 years ago that uses the Deck TV, right?
Yeah, I hear about it. Yeah.
So 2 years ago, sits out there. Take it out. It's not, so it doesn't get updated very often. Just when I'm watching it, you plug that thing in. You turn it on. I hit the power button. Takes a while to come on. Then I think it's a Fire TV. So then it starts firing up the Fire software. That takes a while to get there.
I feel like that's the worst one too, the Fire TV software. Just so long every time.
Yeah, it just takes forever. And then you're like, well, and it has to be a combination of both probably bloated software and severely underpowered. I mean, they don't sell those things for $150 and put decent chips in them, right? This has got to be some really crappy, probably bottom shelf. You know, the TV was $100 or whatever, $150.
Well, and I think that's a good use for it, though, right? You're taking it outside, it's going to get banged up, and then you're going to hit it against something. You don't want to spend a lot of money on a TV like that. It's kind of like anymore when we're doing outdoor TVs, we used to have to sell like a $2,000 TV for an outdoor TV, and that would be like a 50-inch. It'd be a relatively small TV. But anymore, it's, you know, if it's not going to be in direct rain, just buy a cheap TV and just replace it every, you know, 5 years or so.
Yeah.
We did a restaurant here in town, and they have four TVs on the outside of their building, and it's got like a small awning above it. Nothing like fancy. It definitely lets water behind it. And they've had the TVs out there for 6 years now, and they're still fine. I mean, they still work just like they did before.
Really?
Yeah.
They're getting wet and or not. Yeah.
I don't think they're getting directly wet, right. But you know, they stay out there in wintertime and everything like that. So, and they're not getting turned on in the wintertime.
And it, how cold do you think, what's the coldest temperature it gets in that spot? Does it go below zero there?
I would assume so. Well, yeah. I mean, in general, we get negative sometime with the wind chill and everything like that. So, relatively cold. So
I've always been afraid of leaving them out there in the winter, you know? So I think we probably used that TV last in November. Mm-hmm. Right. And then I brought it in and it sat here till April. And of course, so you take it out and you plug it in and then it starts sensing like, hey, I haven't been on in 6 months. Do I, you know, I need to download some stuff. So that first time you use it, I guess I got to learn just to take it out early. You
know? Well, and I think even with the Fire TV, I think the answer is to not buy a Fire TV, if I'm being honest. because like, even if you just want to use like an external device, like an Apple TV or something, it's like, it still takes forever to boot up. They're not very good TVs. But like I said, it's the use case you're using it. Right, like if you're going to do this in your living room, I would totally judge you. You know?
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know.
We're
Google it. I used a NVIDIA Shield for a while here, and then that it's an old one, so it kind of quit working. And I think we're using a Google TV now kind of thing. What would you what would you recommend at this point for me if you were to say, hey, the best for the value right now from a TV standpoint or controller standpoint, what would you say?
Well, if you're going to go with a TV, honestly, Sony or LG are pretty good. Yeah. I would lean towards Sony just because I think that the Android operating system is the best built-in software out of all the TVs. I think it's better than the Samsung and LG and stuff like that. Okay. I use an Apple TV, though, with any TV that we have. Yeah. I think the Apple TV is just the nicest. Yeah. We really don't use like the AirPlay features or we don't buy anything from the Apple store. We use it just to watch TV, but I think it's the best. I've had all of them at this point. I've had Roku and NVIDIA Shield and stuff like that. And they all have their pluses and minuses, you know?
Yeah. I think that's where I need to go. Cause I've been neglecting the living room TV here for a while. Shield went down. Sarah never told me. She was like, yeah, I just stopped working. I was like, oh, is that, she's like, no, I just do it other ways. And she's even getting on her phone now with channels and just streaming it, you know, finding what she wants and just streams it to the TV. So that works well. I have a pre-smart TV, right? I mean, it was one of the last years before they really started making them smart. It's a Sony. But no, that's not true. It's a Samsung. Samsung TV. But works great. There's no smarts to it. It just fires up.
Yeah.
It goes right to where it needs. And then it would be a good one to put an Apple TV on.
I mean, honestly, I'm like whenever, so I run an AV company, you know, we sell TVs and automation systems and stuff like that. And we try to sell it like an Apple TV or even a Roku with every TV. And we literally make no money on it. Mm-hmm. It's just a better experience all around for most people. Yeah. And especially if you have multiple TVs, the consistency is nice, right? You go to a different TV and it works the exact same way with the same type of remote and everything. So I think that's the best way to go.
Would you say Roku above Fire, or are they in the same category?
Yeah, honestly, I would probably at this point, I would go in this order, like an Apple TV, some kind of Google box, and then a Roku. Okay. And then Fire TV. I never look at Fire TV. I don't know what it is, but like all the Amazon Fire products have never been that good to me. They've been all right, but I don't know.
It works. You know, we get it out and get it started, and we fire it up a few minutes ahead of time, and it takes 5 or 10 minutes to get everything set up and working, and before it tells me it needs to do an update, and then it does the update, and then we throw, and my use case on the deck is really just Pandora for music. You know, we put on a random Pandora channel and just listen to that. I get a few ads, but it's okay. We're doing other things, you know, it kind of works well, but okay. Well,
yeah,
that's good advice.
You know, at the end of the day, it's whatever you're happy with, you know,
Whatever works.
Yeah. Functionality, whatever you prefer.
I wanted to bring it down here and make it another monitor so I could have 13 monitors.
Oh, there you go. That's what you need.
So yeah, that'd work out.
How many monitors are you using right now? Because I have 12. 2 32-inch monitors.
Yeah, I have 12. Well, I have 12 devices that have a screen.
Okay.
Let's just say, right. So, you know, that includes some tablets that you know, some touch tablets. I've got a Surface down here. I've got a bunch of monitors around. Now, there's four that I use for work, I count the four that I, because the work is separated.
Right.
You know, home for, I probably don't need them anymore, to be honest. I could probably take them down because I don't, I'm going in the office 5 days a week and I'm rarely down here working. But on the
as soon as you take it down, you'll need it though. That's how it always works, you know?
Sure. We'll have another pandemic the second I take it down, send everybody home. TJ, before we get into what we're going to talk about tonight, it's good, some good TV talk. Thanks for that's a good, some good recommendations for me on that. What's going on at hometech.fm? Gavin always updates us when he's here, but what's coming up or what's exciting over at hometech.fm
right now? Yeah, we're working on some interviews. I can't really say who we're working on right now. We've actually been doing a small segment on tariffs. So, you know, tariffs have obviously been affecting all of everything in the world at this point. And we had Agnes from Zoos on the podcast, and she talked about, you know, the tariff effect on their company. For those that don't know Zoos, they make Z-Wave devices. They're the most affordable Z-Wave devices on the market. Like I'm talking a light switch for $25 and $35 like MSRP, but it's always on sale for $25, for example. Their website is getzoos.com. Not a sponsor in any capacity. I just love what they do. So they make relatively affordable Z-Wave products. We talked to Agnes about what the tariffs meant for those. It seems like they're pretty well insulated from a lot of the tariffs because they moved a lot of their production out of China during the first Trump presidency. And they have, I think it's like 25% manufacturing in China still, but the rest is in Vietnam, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
So they've already mitigated a lot of that damage, luckily, but still subject to tariffs in for some capacity. And so that, you know, those cheap devices are going to get more expensive at some point. It's just a matter of when.
Well, it'll be interesting to see second half of the year, first half of the year, all these companies massively imported as much as they possibly could afford and store. And so we've got a little bit of insulation from it. I think this is what's going to allow prices to stay fairly stable. Although in the retail space here in the United States, anyways, we're beginning to see some of the retailers start leaking like, hey, we're going to have to raise prices here at some point, which is interesting when they never gave that warning forecast during the, when they actually raised them during the, you know, the post pandemic inflation stuff that happened pretty much globally. None of the retailers announced then that they were going to do it, but they're doing it now. And of course it's a big political event in a lot of ways, but I think there's going to be a little lag, especially in the tech space where things may stay where they're at for a little while. As I was talking to Doug last week, we were talking about hard drive prices, and I track those almost every week, and I saw a little bit of bump in the new ones. Used bumped a little bit in response to it. And then last week, I'm starting to see them pull back a little bit, kind of maybe there hasn't been quite the impact that they thought there was going to be. But at some point, with the numbers as big as they are, they got to kick in. So I've been trying to be smart about my purchases, get ahead of them maybe a little bit, and then think, what can I live without for a while until this thing settles down? You know, I don't need to be going out and buying just the latest of everything. Although, I mean, there's still some really good prices out there. You and I, in the first part here, we're talking about TVs. TVs are still pretty good deals right now. And I think if I needed one, now would be a good time to buy one. Agree? Disagree?
Yeah, I would say you should do it now. I mean, for example, actually, Sony already announced a price increase with their new models of TVs. And they didn't like specifically announce it. It's just $500 more in America than it is in other countries. And so that, you know, we're going to see more of that. And I think what's really going to hurt is that we are approaching the time where, retailers are starting to order their holiday inventory. And so like, if we don't see any decrease in tariffs, maybe we see less people, ordering things, or, maybe they buy more. I don't know, but it's definitely going to have an effect of some sort.
Well, we've had a good run here in the United States, and it's created an appetite for, you know, consumerism in a lot of ways. Of like, yeah, if I just wanted, I'd go out and buy it. And I think we may be moving back to a more conservative view of like, well, maybe I still need to pick and choose a little bit, like, and just, I can't just buy everything. You know, that's available. From a car perspective, we kind of thought at one point, do I, you know, I have a 2016 and a 2021, the 16's paid for. Do I, move the 16 on now, and we just kind of decided, you know what, it's paid for, let's just it will last. It's a great car. Newer cars last longer, all those kinds of things. So
we went through this similar thing. I wanted to trade our Corolla in. We have a 2018 Corolla that's fully paid off. And we can supposedly get, you know, between $10,000 and $15,000 for it. And we paid $15,000 for it like 6 years ago. And so I was like, well, now's the time, you know, to get rid of it. It's got like almost 100,000 miles. So it's not even broken in yet for a Toyota. And I was looking at a Ford Maverick. I really like the looks of those. But it's just like, you know, do I really want to take out like a $20,000 loan for a vehicle right now? I don't think so. So I decided against that. I don't really need it anyway. I mean, we drive the work van most of the places during the week. Right. And so like the car we use 2 days out of the week for the most part. So,
yeah, no, it's a good, money's not as cheap as it was, you know, a couple of years ago. And, you know, that too shall pass, I think, at some point. But Brian says out in chat, yeah, it's hard to keep up when we think about tariffs. Oh, I didn't change the color on this one. We'll do this really quick.
Yeah. And we do this live. I keep getting emails about tariff price increases as well. It seems like a couple times a week, I would say I'm getting an email from a manufacturer that says, hey, prices are going up 5 to 15% at least.
We saw this in the 70s here in the United States, and the 80s were a reaction to that. I think we're going to spend the rest of this decade going through this. And then of course the 2030s will be a reaction to that. So we'll have to see how all those kinds of things go. Well, TJ, good to have you on here. Let's talk a little bit about, Gavin alluded to this, I think, last time he was on, but HA, or Home Automation, or I'm sorry, Home Assistant Community Days was just last weekend. You hosted one there in Ohio. How'd it go? And like, what was the turnout? And tell me a little bit about what you guys did during that time together.
Yeah, so Home Assistant Community Day was literally announced this year. It was announced, I think, on like April 24th with a day of May 24th for the actual event. And it's just a global event where anybody that wanted to host a Home Assistant meetup day, they could do that. And so I was like, well, I'll go ahead and host one in Columbus, Ohio. Why not, you know? Yeah. And so you could just go on to the event and create one. You added the Home Assistant people to the event as like moderators, and then they would list it on the official registry. And so it's basically whoever claimed it. I was the only one in Ohio, as far as I know, that signed up to host the Home Assistant Community Day. We had about 16 people. So pretty good turnout. Yeah, we went to a brewery here in town called Seventh Son. They have a really nice atrium space that is basically never used. It's always empty for some reason. But we all hung out there, and I gave away products. We had a lot of products from companies there. We had Innovelli, we had Zoos, Railink, and Apollo Automation. Trevor and Justin from Apollo Automation actually came up from Kentucky to meet everybody, and they gave away products and showed off their new sensor they're building.
Did you have to reach out to them and be proactive about that?
Oh yeah, 100%. So one of the things that's nice is that I'm usually the one that's scheduling the interviews for Home Tech. Okay. And so I already have contacts for people. And I literally just started emailing people that we've had on the show or people that have sent me products before. And I'm like, hey, I'm hosting this Home Assistant Community Day. I want to give stuff away. Can you send me some stuff? And everybody sent me a lot of, I mean, Innovelli sent me like 15 switches or something obnoxious, 10 switches. Nice. I don't remember how many exactly. Railink sent a couple cameras. Zoos sent a bunch of sensors. So it was a cool way for people to actually touch the products and see them. And then I literally just gave them all away during the event. So I just walked around and I said, hey, go to that table and pick out anything you want. So that was pretty nice.
Walked away with something.
Yeah. And hopefully something new, you know?
Yeah. What'd you learn from the experience? I mean, is that one, do you think they're going to do it again next year? Did you learn anything about hosting like that? Have you done that before?
Yeah. So we, my wife and I actually run a child-free group. And so we typically host a lot of events anyway. So I'm used to hosting events in general, but not for technology. And for me, I like technology, but I'm not like a programmer. I'm not a developer. And so some of the meetings I go to for that kind of stuff, it's just way above my head. But home automation is what I do, and I really enjoy messing with Home Assistant. So that part was pretty nice. I had a kind of an itinerary set up of stuff that we were going to do, but we did none of it. And we just hung out and talked to each other.
Really?
It was great. We just talked about different automations, what products people were using. I mean, it was a really fun event. It was basically spontaneous because, like I said, only a month notice. So,
yeah. And did you have, so you didn't have any problem keeping, how long did you meet for?
We met 1 to 4, so 3 hours.
Oh, that's not bad.
And then
did you have food there? Like,
we did not. There was a food truck at the brewery.
You're at the brewery.
Yeah. And then we actually went across the street to, there's a food hall afterwards with Apollo Automation guys and then another guy named Brian. So there's a food hall with a bunch of different food options across the street that we went to.
You're in the space. Anything you learned product wise from that? Were there anything you'd pull out of there and say, man, I'm glad I did this because I learned this?
Yeah. Well, so we've had Apollo Automation on the show. But they actually brought one of their wireless sensors, a new PoE sensor, I should say. It is a PoE millimeter wave sensor. And so I don't know any other PoE millimeter wave sensor. Millimeter wave, for those that don't know, is basically like a more refined motion sensor. A motion sensor works just by simple light changes, basically, is the easiest way to explain it. But millimeter wave can actually detect people. And if you have like a nice one, it can detect multiple people. And so I actually got that sitting next to you here right now. But I've never seen anything like that before.
Hmm.
And they're just now launching that. I think they got about 4 or 5 weeks. And it's $67 for a PoE smart home sensor, which I don't think is bad, right?
No, it's not bad. We were talking, I can't remember if we were talking about this in pre-show or during this show. But do you feel like, at that $67 price point, do you think that's a valuable, it's not cheap gear, so to speak?
Yeah, I don't think it's cheap necessarily, right? Like if you're just an average user, you're probably not going to buy this. But if you enjoy, automation and, kind of the more fine tuning of automation, I would say, because it's not just like a simple turning your lights on and stuff. It's making sure your lights don't turn off, for example, when you're in the room. And so it's a little more nerdy. There's a lot more settings. So not an entry level device by any means, but if you're a super nerd and you have some extra Cat 6 cabling somewhere, I think it's an awesome option.
Yeah. All right. You're showing a picture for those listening to on the audio. You're showing a picture. I'm assuming this is the group that was there in the location.
Yep. This is everybody that was there. Everybody pretty much stayed for the entire time. So this is,
would you do it again? Are you going to do it again next year? Have they said they're going to do it again? And do you think they'll give you a little more notice than a month to pull something like this off?
Yeah, I think, yeah. And everybody was actually asking us to do it more often as well. They said, how often is this going to happen? Yeah. And I said, right now it's only once a year. And they said, well, it'd be nice if it's twice a year. And so I might have to do that. I'm part of another tech group here in town. And so there's all kinds of venue spaces we can host it at, especially if we have 20 or 30 people. It's relatively easy to find a space.
Yeah. We used to do this in the home server show space, home server show. And then so home servers, and we'd go to Indianapolis. Dave McCabe would host those. And we did them for 5 or 6 years. And they were a ton of fun. Once a year, big event. But I could see in a local, in a local setting, and especially in the home automation space, the home server space is, I don't want to say it's dead. It's just everybody's using enterprise grade equipment or, whatever's there. There's a lot of capabilities there. In the home automation space, there's a lot of new stuff, relatively still exciting. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Oh, I would absolutely agree. And I always give Gavin grief because he's a HTPC guy. And so he always has a home theater computer. And I'm like, I just get an Apple TV, dude. It's so much simpler. And he's always talking about Unraid and hosting his own stuff. And it's too much hassle for me, to be honest. Yeah. And I'm pretty clumsy anyway. And so I feel like if I hosted my own photos, for example, they'd all be gone in a couple of years because like the hard drives would die or something. I've definitely hosted my own Plex server and stuff, but I don't have any desire at this point.
No, right on.
Kind of lazy. The automation's where I'm at.
I think we're in a space where there's a few diehards. I still have quite a bit, and a lot of folks that listen here are still doing some home server. You know, in fact, I'd love to, if you're listening to the show and you still got a home server, I'd love you to send me what you're still running. This could be, let me take you, I'll figure out how to take that. All of a sudden I'm like, how do I remove the picture here? So I'm not quite sure. Just
I keep forgetting I'm sharing the actual screen.
Yeah, no, there you go.
That's awesome. Funny.
So if you're still running home server, send me an email, jim@theaverageguy.tv. Tell me what your setup is. I'd love to know who's of the listeners who's still running home storage at home. I bet it's more than you think, but TJ, I completely get it. You know, as far as the setup goes, if I wasn't doing crypto mining, I went into a phase where I kind of started just getting rid of most of my data. I'm like, nobody wants this stuff. I don't need to keep it around anymore. You know, I'm not going to give it to my kids. If it's one of those kinds of things, you know, we keep most of our pictures and stuff now in the cloud, you know, mm-hmm.
Google Photos makes it so easy, right? Yeah. And it's not like, I mean, it's not crazy expensive. I never minded hosting my own, like my own movies and stuff like that off Plex, but it's always the hard drives that get you. Cause it's like, you know, you can build a server for next to nothing, or you can buy a Synology or whatever, but then you got to buy $300 or $400 hard drives. And I'm like, that's just, that's so many. If you want a lot of storage, if you don't delete things, like I don't delete things, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. I just found an 18 terabyte hard drive for $180, which is sweet spot of $10 a terabyte, you know? And you're like, now it's used, it's got a 5-year or three to five year warranty. One of those kinds of things, but we're that's why I said those hard drive, but it's still it's one of those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't want to, you know, you're, if you're going to get into it, you're going to want 3 to 4 drives,
right?
And, you know, kind of set up or whatever. I've been using Open Media Vault, been testing that one too, which is a Linux distribution of a home server, you know, of a home server operating system. And it's maintained by a couple guys, mm-hmm. you know, and you're like, how long is this going to stay around for? You know, it's not the most intuitive to set up. Now that I've got it set up, you're like, okay, this kind of makes sense. But yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. At this point, I'm like, I'm all right with paying for stuff. Like, I don't want to like pay for like subscriptions. I'm still not a big fan of, but like when it's convenient like that, like Google Photos, Google probably selling all my stuff. That's fine. But it's just so convenient. Just upload my photos. And it's like $3 a month.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree. I don't disagree. I'm even getting to the point with photos where I'm kind of like, how many of these things do I really need to keep? Like,
yeah,
I know. I know we obsess, and there's some folks who obsess about those pictures of the kids, and I get it. I understand it. But I'm to the point, like, if they wanted them, they would have come gotten them. They look at them every once in a while. There are those kinds of pictures you look at every once in a while and you're like, oh, this is cute, but nobody wants to keep them.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, especially when it's physical photos, right? There's just, it's so daunting to digitize those and keep them. And it's just, you know, it's a lot of effort.
In the digital age, we've gotten even worse about the number that we take.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Those pictures. And then you kind of, they start taking on kind of like a kingly status, and you're like, hey, they're not ordained. Like, they're not these pictures. They're just pictures. And yeah, if, you know, to be honest, the kids, they took the ones they want already. They downloaded them somewhere and have them. I don't know. I just, Ed Sullivan, who's a good friend of mine, he laughs at me every time we talk about this. He's like, Jim, you're heartless with pictures. Stop talking about the pictures. And I'm like, I just don't think we need as many pictures as we think we need.
Do you ever think of like how many like just junk photos that you have? Because like, example, you know, this home assistant community day, I have 10 photos of us in the group, and it's basically all the same pose. It's just 10 photos taken in a row. Yeah. I can't imagine like how many photos of that. Or I use my phone a lot for work, and I'm always shoving my phone in like walls or ceilings and recording videos and stuff. So I can see tons of videos of that. Yeah, just taking up my space.
With the granddaughters, and I, you know, you go click, 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 click.
Yeah. 'Cause
you can.
Right.
Like, you're like, one of them will be good. Right. Especially with the grandkids. 'Cause they're, you know, they're looking all over the place. You're trying to get a picture of them. So you take you take 5 or 6 or 10, and then I don't ever go back and delete them. And, you know, you're like, oh, these, I shouldn't have 8 of the same, the same thing. Right. I think eventually AI will get in this space and it'll keep the best one, or it'll do something along those
lines. I hope so. Google Photos is like the best to implement that at this point. Yeah, they need to build that into it. They do a lot of stuff actually with like duplicates and stuff like that. So they do a pretty decent job.
Yeah. Joe agrees with you, by the way. He says, yeah, most of my picks are the backs of servers.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? Yeah, yeah. You know,
AV receivers, TVs, all kinds of stuff.
Serial numbers, you know, like the fridge broke the other
day. I'm never going to look at that. I don't even know what it goes to at this point.
you snap a photo so you can go online and put the model number in so you can troubleshoot the problem, and then you're never gonna use that again. Anyways, okay, we didn't come to talk about pictures. You've got some I was excited when I saw this. You've got some gardening tech, and Gavin talks about this too. He comes at it from he's always trying to get a water sensor going so he can know when to water the garden and stuff. Where are you at? You've been doing some work in the gardening space. What are you liking? What's working well? Talk a little bit about that and share your screen if you want to show pictures.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I have a lot of photos here. We bought our house 2 years ago, and there was no gardening done at all. It was basically just grass. There was a large tree in the front yard that the previous homeowner cut down, and like that was it. And so this is the house. How do I make this bigger? I don't know. But there was a big tree that was in this corner over here. And the previous homeowner chopped it down. It was too big or something. I'm not really sure. But as you can see, there's just not much going on, right? And so we bought the house.
Just grass for the audio listeners. It's a lot of grass. It's like in Ohio, the perfect Ohio yard. Flat and a lot of grass.
Yeah, and no trees. Shade at all. There is a tree in the back of the yard in the before pictures that has been removed, unfortunately, because we put a fence up. But just literally no trees, no bushes, anything. And it kind of just looked like a renter's house. The people we got it from, they had actually lived in the house for like 50 years. Her family owned, or her parents owned it before her, and then she got the house. And so it's the same family that owned the house since it was built.
You guys
built.
Gutted it, right? I mean, you gutted it down.
Not really. I mean, we just work on it room by room kind of thing. We're kind of have a lot of projects going on at the same time. And so like I'm always running cable or redoing the electric or something like that. So if you walk into my house, it's kind of like Swiss cheese. There's just holes cut everywhere that we're working on patching and painting, but we haven't quite got there yet.
Okay. That's right.
So, it was a good shape house that the person just took care of, but they never changed anything. They didn't upgrade anything. And then here is the front yard after. So we added all these garden beds. We added a tree. Basically just transformed the front yard, right? It made it a little more inviting because it looked like somebody rented the house. It didn't look like somebody that cared for the house, really, honestly.
Sure. Well, it's less maintenance, right? You mow the yard, a couple trees. I mean, all that stuff requires, you start putting in this landscaping and then, okay, so I got little plants. Now I got to get water to them. Mm-hmm. Now we got a nice walkway going up the front. Well, we need to light it so people aren't tripping over things, right? You start now. Okay, well now I don't want, when I'm mowing it, I want mowing edges on so I can, so it looks nice. So when you start, it looks like you have a fire. Did you put a fire pit in there as well? Is that what over to the right? Is that what?
No, that is actually where the old tree was. We tried to grow grass there for like a solid year. We could not get grass to grow there just because the tree roots were decaying. And it just, there, we couldn't put anything there. Right. So I just decided to just put a round garden bed. We put some wildflowers there. And I figured at some point we'll remove the garden bed and there'll be better soil there. So,
yeah, a lot of people don't realize those, a decaying tree, the roots of a decaying tree, or if you have it ground down, they put off a lot of heat. And as they're decaying. And it'll actually, the heat and the tree itself will keep the grass from growing. So
yeah, I didn't realize that, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. It's real common with trees. You think you grind it down and you spread the mulch out and you're like, okay, we're good to go. Put some grass seed in there. And you're like, no, it's going to, you need a couple years. You did the right thing, by the way. Mm-hmm. You got a rock boundary around that and then top it with some dirt. Then those, I'm assuming you're putting annuals in there, and you can change it every year if you want, or if you want to plant some perennials in there, they'll do well in that space. Grass just does not like the heat coming off of the the tree.
Yeah, we honestly had no idea what to do with the front yard, and so I actually hired a landscape design service, and he came out to the house. I think it was like $300 or $400, and he basically told us, you know, where to put garden beds and what plants to use, and we followed it, I would say, like 75% of the way, because we just didn't know what plants to use. Honestly, we've never had a house before, and for me, I'm a lazy front yard gardener. I want the house to look nice, but I don't want to spend a lot of time on the maintenance of the plants, right? Because I just wanted to add to the look of the house. But I'm not getting anything out of it. I'm not getting any tomatoes or anything out of it, you know?
Yeah.
And we have a lot of deer around here as well, surprisingly. We're kind of in a suburban area. And so everything we have to get is deer resistant. So,
dogs of the forest is what I call them. They just
they eat everything. It's crazy. Yeah. Like, you ever walk around and see arborvitaes and they're half dead just because they've been eaten
or rubbing up against them? Yep. Or I mean, they're just horrible. Any tech in the front yard? You got anything? Have you put anything out there?
Yeah. So we have. I have landscape lighting out the wazoo at this point. I sell landscape lighting, and so for me to add landscape lights is relatively easy. And I can always tack on a couple of lights to every order that I do. Mm-hmm. And so I have some nano leaf house lights on the house itself. Those are pretty nice. A little on the ugly side because you can see the wire going to each one of the little puck lights. Those get installed underneath the eaves of the house. But it lights up the house in all kinds of festive colors.
I'm assuming RGB controllable, each one of them is controllable in some way. You can set a... You know, TJ, one of the things... my neighbor got one of these, and I've got a... You know, I've got a Christmas light one that I bought that you go into the app and you have about 17 options for color, different color things and stuff. Then you can go into a color wheel and set all these different ones. And I find like options equal confusion on that. Sometimes I'm like, I don't know if I want to, you know, if I want to choreograph every single lighting feature that I do. You know, are there easier ways to do this, or is there some help on this if you're going to put lighting? Because I do like, you know, right now I just change it to red, white, and blue, right? We've got 4th of July coming up here in a month. And so my lights come on in the evening and they rotate red, white, and red. I don't know why I can't say white, but red, white, and blue just for 4th of July. Are there some better setups for that? Or in your experience, is it better to just give a few options instead of a thousand, so to speak?
Honestly, I'm probably the worst person to ask because I don't even use RGB lights that much. We have smart lights all throughout the house and I have a bunch of them outside. But I only set them to colors during the holidays and then, they're just white most of the time. I have mine tied into Home Assistant and, I can have it whenever like the front yard camera detects somebody, the lights can flash red, for example. Yeah. And so I have some weird stuff like that. But it's pretty much just white all the time.
Yeah. Ken's asking a question in chat about what are some good products for lighting eaves if you were
so,
gonna
so anyway. I've so Nano Leaf and Govee sent me their house lights. I would probably go with the Govee ones, to be honest. The Nano Leaf ones, for some reason, I've just had a lot of connection issues with, and I actually gave the Govee ones to my neighbors across the street and I helped them install it. It just seemed like a better product. The only thing I didn't like about the Govee ones is that for some reason they only let you use double-sided tape to install them. And I'm sure that's not going to be a huge problem up here because it stays relatively cold. But in a hot place like Florida or Texas, I think that the lights would just fall off. So a lot of people, they would print off 3D printed clips that go around the light and give you screw holes. Yeah. But I think the Govee software is just better in general. So.
It is pretty good. You know, Govee kind of came out of nowhere. I've been using them for my humostats for the scar boxes. So they have Bluetooth humostats. They kind of came in that space. And then I've had those for a lot of years. And then lighting, they started getting into the lighting business. And now they're pretty big in the lighting business. They've got a lot of different options. And I do. Their software is pretty good. So that's probably not a bad recommendation.
We had to get rid of our favorite Govee product this winter. They had a smart space heater that you could turn on and off with an app. And it was fantastic. You could set it up on a schedule and everything, but I think they got in trouble. Like whatever the government body that regulates that kind of stuff was like, that's a little unsafe to let people turn on a space heater remotely.
Yeah.
So we actually had to cut the cord off of it and submit a picture and they gave us a refund.
Wow.
But it was awful. I thought about keeping it because it was just so convenient. And like, yeah, now I just have like a dumb space heater connected to a smart outlet. But the Govee one was nice because you could set it to an exact temperature and it would turn off and everything.
Yeah. 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 Ken said, yikes. Didn't realize they were double stick tape.
Yeah. You can get the 3D printed clips, and that's what we did for my neighbor across the street. But it's just, there's so many lights. It's like 100 clips at that point.
What I really want. So I have a front porch that's got probably, it's probably 12 or 16 feet wide by 6 to 8 feet, you know, high, that I really want like a like one of those big screens from like stadiums that you would put on there, right? Fill that space and then have, you know, crowdsourced holiday movie thing, not movies, but like, you know, things you'd put on there that would, you know, show pictures and that kind of stuff for the holidays and such. Now here I just complained about setting red, white, and blue. I'm thinking about doing something like that.
Yeah, I was gonna say, what are you gonna put on the screen anyway, you know?
Yeah, well, yeah, no, I'd have to think about that, and then I have to find something and then put it on there and program it in and make sure it worked. But that would, you know, I bought one of those net, it's a Philips, and it's net lighting. It's kind of designed to go over a bush, but I just, you know, I just staple it up to the deck and then it just flashes the colors. I don't know if my neighbors hate that or love it. They haven't complained to me. It runs every night, you know, comes on at dusk. It goes off at 11. So it's not running all night, but the smart lighting in front of the house, I mean, I use mine more as decorative. We just have a security light that comes on around the house. Do you, for the eaves lighting up front, do you control those in a way and turn them off at a certain time? Do they come on? Do they only come on when people are around? How do you set yours up?
Yeah, so for all my lights, I pretty much just have them on from sunset to sunrise. I just leave them on.
Okay. Bust Out says, I had to cut the cord, taking the picture, then solder.
You know, honestly, I 100% thought about that, but I was like, you know, in my luck is that it would actually catch my house on fire.
Yeah,
and no, my insurance company would be like, hey, you said you got rid of this. And, like I said, I don't think it was actually unsafe. I think that whatever government body that controls that, they were just like, you just can't do that. You know, it's amazing that it was even out, to be honest, because I don't think there was any reports of it catching on fire or anything like that. But somebody approved it along the way.
Maybe asking for forgiveness instead.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the front. Anything else on the front? You got some back that you want to show us?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, that's the front yard. So here is the backyard, and here's the previous picture. And so there was a chain link fence. This wooden fence is our neighbors on the side. Not a lot going on, but we've done a lot. We added a privacy fence to the backyard. We got rid of that chain link fence. We added this back garden bed with a couple arborvitaes. All the plants that I've bought so far, minus a couple, there's been a couple that I've bought full price, but all of them were discounts at the end of last year. You wait until the fall time. And most of the stuff, I think I got like the arborvitaes were half off. So I got them for like $40 or $50, if I remember correctly. I have a couple rose bushes back there that were basically dying. I got those for $5 each. Yep. And that was the same for the front yard as well. Everything we got up there was pretty much discounted, minus a couple plants, like the tree and stuff like that.
You know, the other thing you can watch for, and I watch for this at Menards, at the end of the season, I'm going to call it semi-smart watering stuff. Like you can get some, you know, their watering controllers that, you know, you'd hook on the end of your spigot, and then there might be some smart either set up right on it, or in some cases it'll attach with an app. Oftentimes those are very seasonal as well, and so if you can wait till the fall and they've got some left, that may be a good opportunity then to pick up some of the, and it's not completely smart, but it's semi-smart, and maybe it is completely smart indeed. Have you picked up any watering devices or anything that because certainly, I mean, that stuff's away in the back. How do you get, you got to go out there and hand water? Or how you?
Oh, man. See, that is my problem, right, is because, so here's a couple more photos of the garden. And as you can see, we have a lot of raised garden beds, and we have a lot of garden beds in general, right? And so it takes so much time to water the garden. And my neighbor across the street, she's semi-retired. She's always watering her lawn or watering the garden and everything, just always out there with a hose doing something. And I don't want my life to be like that, right? We have technology. We can solve that. And so I've actually bought a similar device to what you're talking about, the hose timer. But this is a smart one. It connects via Zigbee to my Home Assistant server, and I can control it right from my phone. And so I think it's $30 or $40 on Amazon, relatively cheap. With that, I split off to two different irrigation lines, and so I can water a couple of different beds at the same time. And I have an automation set up through Home Assistant where it, you know, starts watering three times a day. And it goes off, and if it's detected rain throughout the day, it won't water the garden, and it's got to be above a certain temperature. And so there's a little smarts to it, right? Because if it rained all day, I don't need to water the garden three times a day, right?
No, for sure.
And if it's below 50 degrees, I don't need that.
TJ, tell me the name of that again.
Sonoff, Sonoff, and it's a sprinkler timer Zigbee is what it says on Amazon.
Okay, and you don't have any, I mean, from a reach standpoint, from a, you know, you don't have to put any, it makes it into your home automation setup for that. And you haven't any connectivity problems getting it there at all?
No, I mean, luckily my house is relatively small. I mean, the whole lot for the house isn't that big. It's got a pretty decent sized yard, but my house is only like 1,000 square feet. And so I have my Home Assistant server basically on the outside wall of the house. It just reaches everywhere. I don't have any problems with connection anywhere in the house.
By the way, Seth checked in. He said he'd done the screen with the Holiday Core Pixel products. They have a kit for $1,000.
There you go.
Do the job. Yeah, I don't.
Nothing money won't solve.
you know, $1,000. Yeah, maybe it'd be good. It's one of those. Yeah, I can see it happening. I'm not sure I want to pay for it to have it happening.
Yeah.
So for your watering, is that just hook onto the hose bib? And then the water comes off it. You have a manifold set up for that. How's that work?
Yeah. So I think this is the part where I need to get something more advanced and do like an actual like irrigation controller. And I haven't got there yet. I'm not smart enough for that part. Right. I got to do a lot of research. That's probably what I'll do this winter.
Sure.
But right now it's basically just like 1/4-inch drip irrigation tubing, that runs to the garden beds. And then from there, I just do drip irrigation tubing. Yeah. And so I just go around the bed with it, and I leave it on for 15 minutes, and it waters the bed pretty well. And what's nice is because you're only watering the small little portions, you're not using as much water as you would like a normal garden hose, and you're not soaking the whole garden bed because the whole garden bed doesn't need water.
Yeah, in theory, right? Have you had any trouble with the? Sometimes those lines plug up. You don't. Mm-hmm. You got to check them on a regular basis. It's watering in the wrong spot. They get a leak in them. I'm going to look up. Amazon's got a brand that'll do this for you as well. But it's been one of those. You know, I've researched this too. You know, and then you got every winter you got to pull those drip lines in, and that means the next spring you got to set them all back up again, right?
So that's what I'm wondering. I've been told that if it's just drip irrigation tubing, you can basically just disconnect the end point and it won't freeze or ruin the tubing. I don't know if that's true. A regular irrigation system, you do have to drain because it's a closed system, right? Everything's just connected. Right. You leave it all in place. This one, I'm going to actually disconnect from the spigot and everything. So I'm hoping I don't have that issue. Okay. This year, I was a little smarter, though. Last year I kind of just ran it along the fence line and then dug it into the ground. And so that way I could like walk across it and everything. But yeah. The problem is my weed whacker, throughout the summer kept hitting the drip irrigation line and busting it. And so this year I ran conduit for most of my drip irrigation. And so that way it goes exactly from the hose spigot, to the fence. It's all in conduit. When it goes to the garden bed, it goes into the garden bed in conduit. And so that way I don't have to worry about hitting it as much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. And then sometimes it gets brittle, you know, yeah. If you leave it out here in Nebraska, your area too, we get some pretty cold temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
You leave that stuff out. I've tried to do that too. A couple seasons and I don't know, maybe 3-4 seasons.
Yeah.
And then it gets super brittle and it starts leaking in places you didn't intend to leak it. Listen, I'm not saying you shouldn't do drip irrigation. I just think it's a lot more maintenance than mm-hmm. you think. I think sometimes you think, I want to put this in a southern climate. Maybe that's different, but in a northern climate like we have, you kind of like it does. It's a little more maintenance than you think. I don't know. Do you agree or disagree?
No, I would agree. We did drip irrigation last year for the first time. And there's always like a pipe bursting or getting hit or something like that. I think in the long run, it saves time though, because I spend 30 minutes sometimes watering all the garden beds if I'm doing it with the hose. So, you know, 30 minutes twice a day, if it's really hot, maybe three times a day. That's a lot of time to spend on watering. So I think it actually does save me time, but I need to do it in a more professional manner. So.
Yeah, Rainbird, of course, is one of those here in the United States. Rainbird is one of those brands in the irrigation space that you can find just about everywhere. They've actually kind of gotten into the home automation space. I haven't checked to see if they have a home assistant automation. Wouldn't surprise me if they did. They've got some pretty good, you can find their products everywhere. They're pretty compatible with a lot of stuff you do. And they make some pretty good quality lines and some products. You can kind of move them around. This is one of those years. This is one of those years, TJ, where I'm thinking like, maybe this will be the last year I hand water. And I've been moving all my plants in areas where I can hand water them quickly. Yeah. You know, then I'm like, okay, let's start grouping plants together and I'll go out. I've used a little wand that you know, slows the water down a little bit, and you can kind of just spray it in the areas and kind of do that. Right now in spring, you always feel like you're a garden hero or a lawn hero. Your lawn looks good here, by the way.
I don't do anything to it.
Yeah, well, it's, when did you take these pictures?
Springtime, well, so. I think this was today, but.
Yeah. Yeah, in a spring scenario, we've had a fairly good spring for grass, right? Yeah, you feel like you go out there and you're like, man, my lawn is the best.
Yeah.
Right? I am such a good lawn guy. And then summer comes and you're like, oh, I'm terrible at this.
Yeah.
Would you okay, so you think about, you got some moisture sensors out there thinking about, okay, it knows if it's rained. Does it know from just the weather that it's rained, or does it know from the actual moisture in the ground?
Yeah. So for my house, so Gavin got me into soil moisture sensors. Luckily, guy is always talking about soil moisture sensors.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm using the EcoWit ones. He's using it for his lawn. I don't care about my lawn. Like the backyard, I care about because the dog goes out there and we hang out there and stuff like that. But the garden beds is what I use mine for. I use the EcoWit ones. They work pretty good. That's tied into Home Assistant. And then we actually have a weather station as well. And so we have one installed just on our fence somewhere. And it tells us, you know, how bright it is outside, how much it's rained, and the wind speed and all that stuff. It was a little expensive. It was like, I think it was like $200 when I bought the hub with it. It's EcoWit as well. It kind of gives us some cool insights. And so right now the automation, I think it basically, if it rains more than like 0.1 inches in a day, then it doesn't water the garden beds.
Is it actually collecting EcoWit is what you're saying? EcoWitt for folks.
Correct.
Listening. Does it? And I'll throw that. Let me throw that link in the chat here as folks. I'll have that in the show notes, but God, I've been thinking about getting a weather station just for that. But I also think I could probably just tie into the weather and say, hey, how much rain did I have in this area? And then,
yeah, you absolutely could. Yeah, you could definitely do that. And that would be the easiest way to do it because, like I said, the weather station's $200. So, I mean, you got to really want to know it. Especially if you're a data nerd. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure.
You track all the different weather and everything.
It's wind. I'm sure it's collecting rainwater and then dropping that at a certain time every day and resetting, right? From that perspective, solar powered out there?
Your
weather station?
No, it's got a little battery. I actually have not changed it. It's been like it's probably been a year and a half now, and I have not changed it at all. So,
yeah, listen, every year I think this is the year I get a weather station, and then I start I start looking at the prices, you know, $200-$400, and you're like, maybe the National Weather Service is good enough for me, although they've had some cuts recently. So we'll have to see how good that stays. But you're kind of like, and Gavin also, you're right. He also talks about getting the moisture sensors in your lawn. And I don't want to put them in my lawn either. I kind of want, because I don't want to mow over them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's I think that's his problem. He's always hitting them and stuff like that. Luckily, they're pretty affordable. I think they're about $20 each. So,
well, they're pretty big too.
Grand scheme of things.
It's one of those. It is one of those things.
This this picture I'm showing here, for those that can't see it, this is our back garden bed. And this is where we have some corn and pumpkins and some other stuff going on. But if you see on the fence post, this is another part of my landscape lighting. This is my favorite landscape lighting feature that I have. These are just deck lights that I've installed on the privacy fence. They're about a foot down or so from the top post, and I have them every other post of the privacy fence. And so at nighttime, it lights up pretty much the whole perimeter of the yard. It looks fantastic.
Solar, or are they wired?
No, hardwired, 12 volt, just low voltage landscape. I have them hooked up to a low voltage landscape transformer, and then I just have a Zoo Z-Wave outdoor plug that turns them on every night.
They make some pretty good ones that have a panel built into them. Would you go with something like that, or just the reliability of the power? I mean, the solar ones, they're good for a couple years, and then they're...
Yeah, well, that's the problem, right? Is that most of the time the solar ones are such cheap quality that you end up replacing them. I would say if you're not using it as like a serious like lighting for security reasons, I would just go with solar lights. But if you want like good lights that are going to last a while, just do hardwired. You can buy good lights as like an average user. There's a company I use called Amp Lighting. They have a consumer focused brand called Volt Lighting, V-O-L-T. And they make good quality products. You pay like $60 to $100 per light fixture. And so they're not the most economical lighting option out there, but they last a long time and they're good quality. Easily replaceable bulbs, right? Because nothing's worse than buying an integrated LED light, and then after 5 years it goes bad and you can't find that exact light anymore. And so you have to replace it with something else that looks nothing like your other lights. These all have replaceable bulbs and everything like that. So,
and those are direct lighting. Or, in other words, they're pointing down. You've got them on the post.
Correct. Yeah.
And they're pointing down.
These are typically meant for like deck stairs, right? Yeah. So if you ever go to somebody's house and they just have some deck lights on their stairs going up to the deck or around their deck, these are the exact same things. I've just used them on a fence.
Yeah. I need to, you know, I bought went to Menards and I bought a $15 post, you know, post top lamp for an area out by the fire pit, and it was supposed to be the brightest one they sold and all those other things, and it was okay. I mean, it's at least it's some light out there, but I'm at Volt right now and they've got $100 post top light that I was kind of more interested. That's the size, you know, it sits on top of the post and puts off some good lighting, right? Not the thin little light you would get out of a, you know, out of a cheap one of those. And then I'm already noticing starting to get shorter and shorter times on the battery in there. Battery's not replaceable. Light's not replaceable. So that may be an option for me to go with a really good post light.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I don't like going with the solar stuff. Solar is good for certain things. I think it's good for like certain security cameras and stuff like that. And there's definitely a use case for it. But like I said, I have access to all this stuff because I install it. So why not integrate it into my house?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll have to check that out. $100, but they do. Volt does have a lifetime warranty on.
Yeah, and that's what's nice about the ones. I use their parent company Amp Lighting, just the professional based ones instead. And it's literally a lifetime fixture warranty. Transformers, all that good stuff. Anything that's not what they consider disposable or consumable. So like the finish usually isn't a warranty item, but if it stops working for any reason, they'll replace it.
TJ, from a low voltage, let me say this before I forget, this Volt Guardsman brass post top light I'm looking at, it's also, I had no idea this was a thing. It's dark sky approved, right? Complies with the IDA guidelines to conserve energy, prevent light pollution, and minimize light trespass. I don't know what light trespass is, but
I don't know what that is either. Yeah, there's a big thing, especially, I mean, not so much here, but I think down in Florida and everything with the beaches. There are some dark sky areas, and even certain HOAs around here implement that. So you actually cannot have up lights at all. And so typically people will light up their tree canopies and stuff like that. And you cannot do that in certain areas here.
Yeah. Bust Out says in chat, he says for his outdoor lighting, most of his decorative lighting is solar, no smart integration needed. And that is true. I haven't had, I think you get what you pay for with that. If you're getting the discount stuff at Menards or Home Depot or Lowe's or whatever your big box store is, I think you're going to get, you get what you pay for. I mean, some of that stuff is cheap to deploy. Mm-hmm. Some of it breaks super fast. So, you know,
it's all about use case, right? It's kind of like TVs that we were talking about earlier. And honestly, I really don't need any smart lighting because mine's just on from dusk to dawn. And so I really don't need smart lighting. But once in a while, you know, we're having a fire out back and it's nice to turn the lights off and stuff like that. So we really got it because we found out we have like skunks that come in our yard and stuff. And so I don't want to walk outside and get skunked. So the lights help with that.
Yeah. No, right on. It's we have some skunks too. They were usually louder than they are, so they stay away. You know, they don't want to be around us. They smell the cigars.
They're very brave, honestly, because I've never been that close to skunks until last year when they like came out and we were having a fire and my wife just looks behind me and was like, skunk. And I was like, all right, just calm. Yeah. Like we have like a huge fire going on in our backyard and that skunk did not care.
Wow.
It's like, I'm just going to be over here. It was like 10 feet away digging in our yard. We finally found out what was digging in our yard though. Cause we'd come out and there'd be tiny holes all over the yard. Yep. And I never knew what was doing it. It's a skunk.
Yeah. Yeah. We get them late at night, usually when we're winding down. And for a while they're going under our deck and living under there. And I was like, well, they were okay. They were leaving us alone. I haven't seen them in a while. So maybe something got a hold of them or they decided to move on. Do you think, you're going to spend some time, you know, thinking about your watering this year, right? Do you feel like you're still kind of learning like what you're going to use and that this may change over time? Or do you feel like you're pretty confident and got it locked in and this is what you're going to stick with?
No, I'm definitely going to change what I use. There doesn't seem to be like a ton of, I would say, good information about irrigation out there. There's a lot of stuff going on and there's not really like, I would say, conclusive tutorials on how stuff works. And a lot of times it's talking about irrigation systems for yards instead. And our problem is we just don't have an irrigation system installed. We got one quoted and it was like $5,000 to do like, you know, the backflow preventer and the separate meters. That way you don't have to pay sewage for the water. And it's like, I'm not going to pay $5,000 for that.
Yeah.
So we got to figure something out. I can do some plumbing myself. And so I can easily add another spigot if I need to. It's just a matter of finding out what I actually need to do.
Yeah.
So it's going to 100%. It's going to look different next year.
Yeah.
Like all these drip irrigation lines I'm putting in are probably not going to be used next year in some capacity. Yeah. I'm going to be doing something else because we have so many beds and we're going to add so many at this point. Yeah. I need a more robust and professional system.
I've always, you know, the gardening here in Nebraska, we've got enough creatures that walk through our yard that I end up feeding more of the creatures than I feed us. And I kind of quit doing it a long time ago. You have any confidence? Like your raised beds don't have any any fences around them to protect from the rabbits or the deer or some of those kinds of things. Do you do that more out of enjoyment, or do you feel like you actually get a return on the garden?
Honestly, it's just enjoyable. We do have the privacy fence around the whole backyard, and so we don't have to worry about the deer at least, but we do have to worry about the chip. We have a lot of chipmunks, we have a lot of squirrels around here. And that's why we did raised beds for the most part. But raised beds are so expensive if you want like big ones or metal ones. I think some of them we paid like $200 for. And so this year we just decided to play a little more economical and just do some in-ground beds. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
The raised garden beds, we always do stuff like tomatoes, or we grow a lot of peppers. We grow some Scotch bonnet peppers and some jalapenos and stuff like that. Those won't be affected by the squirrels and stuff for the most part. But
those would be good. We can do that all on the deck. We just don't. I don't know why. I should do more of that, but I don't. I'm going to the low maintenance stuff that deer don't eat. And I still have a ton of hostas. The deer love, that's buffet food for the deer here in our area. So Seth says out in chat, he says, let me bring that up. He says, light pollution kills the stars. Yeah, it's in a lot of areas it does. You need it in some areas that are near observatories, right? Also, being that guy with the bright prison yard lights makes you feel safe, but your neighbor can't sleep. And you know what? Here in my neighborhood, I don't know about you, but here in my neighborhood, it gets dark at night, and then I set up my deck lights. So when we're done, well, one, they're underneath the eaves of the deck, right? So the lights come on, they come down on the deck. I used the 25 foot tube lighting, which has been dynamite so far. I replaced that last fall. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, it made it through a winter just fine, but it's surviving a little bit better than the cheap Christmas lights that we had up there before. Those things seem to get you maybe 2 years before they just fall apart in your hands, right? Basically.
Yeah, we bought some solar lights for the front of the house when we first moved in, because we didn't do the landscape lighting until like last year. And they lasted about 2 years until they started falling apart. But I bought them off a Facebook ad, which I don't think I'd ever recommend. So that's probably my fault. They were shipped straight from TMU or something, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, and it's, you know what? It's some of these things, like, go cheap until you find what you really want. And then once you find, like, oh no, this is important to me. Mm-hmm. This is something that's going to stay around a while. We're going to do it this way. Then make the investment, you know, like the post light. I went with a cheap one, because I was changing that area a lot. I mean, we just put the fire pit in, and I was like, do I really want to run wire out this far? Because I'm going to have to run 25 or 30 feet of wire to get it out to that post. That's mm-hmm. That post's quite a ways away from the nearest plug that's out there. And yeah, it's thin wire and all those other things, blah, blah, blah. I'm just going to staple it to the side. It'll be fine. But still, you got to run wire out there. And so it got me, you know, it just kind of got me thinking. But now that I know, okay, we love the fire pit. It's going to stay out there. Well, you know, $100 investment in a nice post lamp that's out there. That's the one I wanted from the very beginning. Well, maybe it's time, because we found out that we do that same thing, I think, with your gardening, right? You're doing some gardening for a while. Maybe you'll be like, we don't really want all these big box. I see a lot of those box planters or those raised bed planters on the side of the, you know, in the fall or in the spring on the side of the road, as people are like, anybody want these? We don't want a garden, because it's some work, right?
Yeah, it is a lot of work.
Yeah. So anything else on the gardening side of things, TJ?
I don't think so. I'm trying to figure out the irrigation part. So if anybody has any information on setting up irrigation systems, I'd be interested in learning more. So.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, I'm kind of wondering, I've been hesitant to buy the big box store stuff just because, I mean, it's fairly expensive. You can kind of wait for it to go on sale. My hose bib is on the deck where it's really, the deck was obviously put in after the faucet was put in. And so it's like, I have this much clearance.
Oh, yeah.
So then, okay, now I'm going to have to get a extra hose to bring it up, you know, so we can mount it somewhere. And that's okay. And that hose leaks a little bit. Still taking all that. Then I got to figure out, how do I neatly get those hoses, ideally, underneath the deck so you don't see them? And then every winter I got to take them out. So I got to think about, you know, okay, how do I build this in a way they're easy to take out? And then how do I remember to put them back in, right? So all those things are, you know.
See, at least you're smart. Removing them so the weather doesn't break them. I'm just gonna leave them in the ground. So just like, what, we'll figure it out, you know.
Right on. Listen, it's probably, TJ, to be honest, it's probably 6 to 1, half a dozen to the other.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm gonna pull them out, and then I gotta remember, well, what went where, right? And then
which is what I did last year, because I started tearing them out so I could just clean up the yard and stuff like that. And then I was like, oh, well, I'll just put them in this pile over here. Kind of like old wires, right? You ever keep a bunch of old wires? I know you do. You definitely have a couple tubs of wires. And you throw all your wires into this bin. Sometimes you're nice and you Velcro them and stuff like that. But most of the time, you just throw them in the bin. And then you go to get one of those cables, and it's impossible because it's wrapped around so many other cables.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And that's what I did this year. Like, and I just use those as like little scraps and to connect different areas and stuff and cut them down. So,
yeah. Or you forget you have them and you're like, oh, I need to go get this. And then so you get it. And somehow when you didn't see it before you went to the store, but as soon as you get home from the store, you see it. I don't know why that is an effect on it. You're like, oh, I already had some of these, you know? And then you're like,
yeah, and I'm awful because we live close to a lot of stores, but we live really close to a Menards. And I'm at Menards, like I would say 5 times a week for work or just getting stuff for the house or whatever. And so I'm always looking at the discount irrigation stuff and whatever else. I'm like, well, I might as well just stock up now and I'll buy, you know, $100 worth of irrigation stuff because it's half off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have Menards is where I shop at all the time too.
It's fantastic.
It's the closest one. It's the closest one. They sell, listen, they're the Temu of big box stores. Let's just be really clear about that. They sell some really cheap stuff. You got to be careful what you pick up at Menards. So, Ken had brought this up, and TJ, I want to ask you about this. We'd had one of those printer sprinkler, you know what I'm talking about, where you get those sprinklers where you kind of teach it where to water and it shoots out water on your lawn or in your plants.
Yeah, I think you had Irrigreen on, didn't you?
I think so.
Was it them?
It was Irrigreen. Yeah, it was a while ago. Any thoughts on smarter sprinklers as opposed to all the irrigation stuff?
Honestly, I've thought about it, right? Because I could easily just run a hose around my fence and then put it in the corner of the yard. For me, it's the longevity of the product, right? Because it's one of those things that's probably cloud-based 100%. And so is it going to be alive in a couple of years? And they're relatively expensive, maybe cheaper than adding up all the different hose timers and stuff like that. I've definitely considered it, though. It seems like a really good option.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's an incredible thing I think about every year. You know, so this last winter, we had a really dry winter. In fact, we're still kind of in drought conditions here in Nebraska. And so this spring, the lawn was looking a little rough. And I was kind of thinking, you know, maybe this is the year I install some irrigation. Like, I'm tired of it looking this way. 2 weeks later, it was the lushest, greenest lawn. We got a couple days of rain, and it popped right back up and came right back to life. And I kind of, you know, and my daughter is always hassling me about wasting water on things like the lawn. She's like, Dad, the lawn does nothing for you. I said, it makes me feel like I'm the king of the neighborhood. That's what it does, right? You know?
It does make you feel good, right? Because as we're doing all the gardening stuff in the front yard specifically, like I'll be out just working on the yard and stuff, and we'll have people walk by and they'll be like, I love what you've done to the house, or, you know, I love all the garden stuff you've added. And it makes you feel good. So I understand that.
It does. I go back and forth on it. I'm like, I'm going to put some sprinklers in. And then I'm like, no, I'm not. And I could, at this point, I could probably install it myself. But then you're like, well, then I need to install a manifold. And then you said this a second ago. Then you need a backflow. Mm-hmm. And then it needs to be inspected. And then you're like, you know, and you're just like, I just want green grass. Why can't I just get
green? And especially for our house. I mean, our house is not an expensive house, and we're never going to get that money back out of it. And so it's going to serve the purpose for while we're here, and that's pretty much it. And so it's just hard for me to fathom investing my money into a big complicated system like that when I could redo my bathroom or something instead.
Last question before I let you go tonight. Robot lawnmower. Have you been sucked into that at all? Do you have any aspirations for it? Do you have one?
Oh yeah. So I have one. I'm a little salty, because I have the Segway Navimo. And we actually had Wayne from Segway Navimo on the show, and he sent them, Seth and Gavin, robot lawnmowers for free.
What?
But I bought mine last year. And so I bought a Segway Navimo. I bought it with the intention of just doing the whole buy and return thing, you know, because we live in consumer America. You can return stuff easily. Sure. And
especially
I was like,
Costco or something.
Yeah, it was from Amazon. You know, they'll take back a box of empty rocks, I'm sure. And so I was like, you know, I'm going to buy the robot lawnmower. I want to see what it's about. Right. Because for me, I didn't want to bury the boundary wire, you know, that little wire you have to do with the old school robot lawnmowers. That sounds awful to me, because you're always going to have to repair the lines. I hear like rabbits like them or something, rodents and specifically. And so I wanted something that I did not need the guide wire for. And the Segway Navimo is the most affordable option as far as I know. It's about $1,000. So it's not the cheapest option in the world, but it cuts the grass and I never touch it. I go around maybe twice, twice a month, and just weed whack around the fence in different areas. But the robot lawnmower just does it. I manually schedule it, or I manually start it, because there's always something in the yard, like tools or garden tools, that kind of thing. So right. I just manually run it a couple times a week.
It just go around it, TJ, if you were.
Well, it depends on what it is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like we've had some tennis balls cut up. Okay. And some, you know, it accidentally took out my tree the other day. So we got a mulberry tree, and I ran irrigation line around the tree, but I didn't tie down the irrigation line with yard staples, and okay. So it got wrapped up in the wheel, and then it damaged the mulberry tree. So we'll have to see if it survives the year. But it does a mostly good job of avoiding things. Yeah.
Those mulberry trees, we grow those naturally along fence lines in Nebraska. Oh,
yeah. I've never had a mulberry. I saw it on sale and I was like, I'm going to grow one and see what happens. Yeah, are they any good? Do you like them?
They're dirty. They're just.
Oh, are
dirty.
They? I hear they stain. Yeah.
They're purple. I mean, yeah. If you like the purple color of stain on your shoes or on a deck, just the squirrels and the birds love it. It's perfect. The best. Yeah. If you want to feed the squirrels. Wildlife. Yeah, if you want wildlife, they're great for that. We had three along our fence and right by the deck, right by the smoke shack. And they were literally staining it was just purple everywhere.
Yeah.
So I had my neighbor is an arborist, and so he had him cut them down. I was like, we're done. We're done with mulberry. So it's good, it's a good tree to have if you want to support the wildlife.
We'll find out if we like it if we still live here whenever it grows fast.
They grow pretty fast and they're pretty hardy. So you know, Seth says they're fantastic. So nice. They're very hardy and they will grow under amazing conditions. I would say if they grow like a bush, so make sure you train them a little bit to get a little bit higher. Cause in a open environment, they'll just get wild.
That makes sense. Yeah. These are, I always give a little hesitant to whenever they tell me specifics about trees and plants and stuff like that, but these are supposedly semi dwarf ones and they get like 10 to 15 foot tall and like 10 feet wide. So we'll see what happens. We also got some semi dwarf apple trees in the backyard too. So we'll see. Yeah. They're all self pollinating. So
fence line. You might get one, you might get one that birds are really good.
We feed them sunflowers. And so we have sunflowers pop up all throughout our yard everywhere. It's great. And you know where they're either hiding the seeds or they're using the restroom because there's just like a cluster of 20 sunflowers coming up. And you're like, there's not sunflowers anywhere around here.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, my neighbor taught me this year. I didn't know this about sunflowers. So, you buy the giant sunflower heads right in the store, the seeds. And that first year you get the big ones. Then they pollinate with other sunflower seeds. The bees go around, they pollinate it. Chances are they're going to pollinate it probably with a smaller sunflower seed. So the longer you let the seeds naturally pollinate in your yard, the smaller and smaller those heads will get until they come down to kind of the normal.
That makes sense. But, yeah.
Yeah. No, I didn't even think about that. I was like, oh yeah, I guess that's true.
It's kind of like certain peppers, right? Because if you grow a lot of peppers, so we have like jalapenos and Scotch bonnets and habanero and a couple other peppers, and most of them can cross pollinate. But the fruit of the same year is still that original pepper. But if you grow the seeds from one of those peppers, it's going to be something different next year.
It's all about the pollination cycle on those kinds of things. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, peppers would be a good thing. We ought to try those. We ought to try peppers.
Yeah, this year I want to make my own. I want to make my own chili powder and my own chili flakes. I use a lot of chili flakes on pizza, and I always just buy the cheapest chili flakes at the store. And this year I was like, I'm going to make my own. And we have a dehydrator already that we use to make jerky. And so I'll just put them outside in the dehydrator and we'll find out what happens.
Solar dehydrators work pretty well too. You can get those to sit out in the fall and then just dehydrate that stuff out. I said last question, but I'll ask you one more. I know you've got the big, raised bed gardens. Have you done any container gardening? And would you use the same automation like the drip lines to go around the containers?
Yeah, so we don't do much containers, but we do the fabric pots. Have you ever seen those? It's basically just a felt fabric pot, and they make them in 10, 15, 20 gallons. Yeah. And so that's what we put all our vining stuff into, so that way we can easily control it. So we grow loofahs, we grow beans. I have some kind of vining plant up front right now, but all those are in fabric pots. And so that way we can just trim back the vines if needed, and it's not going to go crazy.
Well, I've been thinking, I asked that because as we were talking about drip, I've been thinking about putting drip up in the, you know, where the lights are.
Mm-hmm.
Same kind of idea. I would do it on the outside. So the lights are on the inside, but on the outside, I'd run drip out those, you know, those lines on the outside of the deck. And then when I needed them, I just tap into them and bring them down into a container.
Yep.
And then do the same kind of watering for the containers that are on the deck. Because that's, listen, a deck here in Nebraska in the hot parts of the summer, a container can dry out in hours.
Oh yeah.
You know, you come home and that plant is like, help me. Like, and you're like, I watered you yesterday.
But, yeah. It goes very quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially the fabric pots and stuff. They're very, they can allow a lot of air and stuff in. So we do have those hooked up to our drip irrigation system. Okay. And last year we had a couple hanging, flower pots on the front porch, and we also had drip irrigation going into those. So yeah. Drip irrigation solves a lot of things.
Well, yeah. And that's, for me, I think that would be the actual application where I'd use
it. It makes it a little more enjoyable, right? Because you're not just watering it all the time. You know, it's like if you just had to mow your grass all the time and you never got to hang out and enjoy your grass, I don't know what enjoyment you'd get out of it.
Yeah. Well, I'm probably looking for a drip system that's got multiple outputs that I can control, you know, because some of those areas I want to, you know, some of those areas I want to send more water to. They may have a smaller pot. I don't want to flood that thing. This is the thing with drip too, is that you can overwater with drip if you're not careful, right? Or it can get moldy, right? You know, because it's wet all the time. It does need some time drying out. So there's some things with that. Have you ever thought, do you have you've got some cameras set up. Do you ever use your cameras, your outdoor cameras to monitor the yard from a how are things looking standpoint? You know, you kind of wonder if there's anybody who would, you know, we look for people and dogs and things in the cameras. Couldn't there be a plant camera that would monitor plants and say, hey, this thing needs some water. This thing looks like it needs some water, you know?
Honestly, that's what we need with those printer sprinklers, right?
Yeah.
Because I just needed to look at my plants and just tell me, like, even if I had to put like little auxiliary solar cameras around and just told me how to water it, I think that would be a good use of AI. I'm not really on the AI hype train. Like, I hear people talking about it. I'm not there yet. It is what it is. But there's certain use cases like smart watering for a garden. I can get behind that.
That would be a good combination of those two.
Right now, the only thing I'm really using cameras for in regards to the garden is we have a Rayolink solar powered light. Rayolink sent me the camera for free to review. I've had it installed for a year now, and it's never died on me, which is amazing for a solar powered camera, right? This is the Argus 4 Pro, I believe. It's got a little solar panel. It looks like a little alien. It's kind of ugly, if I'm being honest, but it's installed along the back fence line.
How do you spell that?
Reolink. Okay. And then it's Argus, Argus.
Camera systems for home. There it is.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. Yeah, so they make pretty decent cameras. Some of them are very ugly. But like I said, this one's a solar-powered camera. It's lasted me a year now, and I've never recharged it or anything. I use it to watch the birds. It's actually right next to our bird feeders in the backyard, and so I just use that as my bird camera. I'd like to get a Bird Buddy or one of those other, like... some of those. They're just too expensive for me right now.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, they're really nice, but I have other things.
They are like nice. My BirdFi, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, BIRDFY, BirdFi maybe is the way they say it.
That's BirdFi.
We've got the one for the hummingbirds, and I get a couple notifications a day. We have a hummingbird. We have one hummingbird in our neighborhood, and we call him Francisco, and he's there all the time, and he's the only one I ever see. We've had some orioles come up to the feeder trying to figure out, like, how do I get, like, your beak is not small enough to get, you know, food out of this thing. You know, the Ring cameras that I've had, also we've had the solar ones that I have. So in the backyard, I have a solar. On the driveway, I have a solar. I've never had to replace the battery or do anything with those. They are rock solid as well. So maybe that's the right you have yours has a little, you got a little 4-inch solar panel, right?
Yeah. And I basically installed mine right above the camera. So it's kind of all in the same little compact area. Yeah. And it's on the fence. I mean, it doesn't have to look attractive.
But there, do you have the, does it swivel? Can you control it? Like, can you?
No, the camera is stationary. You know, I can access it from an app just like most security cameras these days, but it's just a stationary camera. It's a panorama camera. And so it's basically got like a 180 degree view, maybe more than that. I can't remember exactly. But it's got a very wide angle view. Yeah. So that's pretty nice. I can pretty much see the whole backyard with it. And I think the price on it's like $150. So it's not bad for what it is. No. You're not going to get continuous or 24/7 recording with it. It's going to be motion based recording. But even that part's pretty fast. Whenever
it detects, do they have a service associated with it? Can you?
I'm sure they do. Yeah. I honestly don't know. I literally just use it to watch birds.
Yeah. No. Right on. It's a good use of it. Right. You could probably even put a little stand of buy it and then just every once in a while to put some bird feed up there.
And I bet 100%. I've added a lot of cameras to the house. Honestly, when we moved in, my neighbors probably thought I was crazy because I've added so many cameras around the house. I'll go ahead and share my screen here. This is my newest addition here. I've really been getting into panorama cameras. And those are the 180 degree view, and you pretty much get an entire area. It's crazy.
Go ahead and share it. I don't see.
Oh, let's see here. Yeah, I'm getting here.
Okay, yeah, we'll bring it in.
So this is in the back corner of the house by my compost bin. And as you can see, this is a nighttime image for those that cannot see it right now. It's 9:30 at night. You can see all the fence lights that I was talking about earlier.
Yep.
But it's in the back corner of the house, and it gets me this entire gate area. It gets me literally the entire yard.
Yeah.
This camera, I'm a dealer for this company. This camera is from Uniview, UNIVIEW. I think my price was like $250 on it. So not the most expensive camera in the world, not the cheapest either. It's PoE powered. I have network wiring in my, when I ran my fence lights, I just ran network wiring as well for an access point and security cameras. And so that's just
PoE really makes sense in this, use case, because you're all the way in the back, your chances of getting solid Wi-Fi back there would probably be small. And you got to power that camera, right?
Yeah.
So that's a good, I think this scenario is a good time to really think about PoE.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And, honestly, even if you're not an experienced person at installing wiring and stuff, you can buy a 1,000-foot box of Cat 6 now for $200, maybe even less. And you could run, 1,000 feet of cable for $300 or $400 altogether by the time you buy the tools and connectors and stuff like that. So it's an affordable option. This one I did. So for this, I think I kind of broke some taboo rules about the ugly side of the fence and stuff, but the back side of the fence along my neighbors, I ran conduit along the whole fence. And so that's, I ran it up high. And so that way I can run the fence lights and network wiring and potentially speaker wiring at some point.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What'd you run? How big of a piece of
conduit? Just 3/4.
Okay.
Yeah. So gray. I figured I did it after I stained the fence. So I figured once I stain the fence again, it'll blend in a little better,
Yeah. That's a good view right there.
Yeah.
That's a really good view.
I think I'm going to put it in the other corner where the arborvitaes are in the right corner, as you see it right now.
Yeah.
Just give me a different view. But for $250, my cost, it's not bad. I think the MSRP on it's like $400 or $450. So it is an expensive camera, but it's basically two cameras in one. Yeah. It's got color night vision on it. So this is, 9:30 at night. And obviously we have some of the lights there and stuff. But even when it's pitch dark, you can still see in perfect color.
That's a good look.
Yeah, I've turned Gavin onto these color night vision cameras, so I think I'm gonna go to Canada at some point and install some for him.
He'll bring them up next time we have him on the show. So cool, TJ. Thanks for the info there. Let me bring you back on screen. Thanks for thanks for coming on. Always great to have you. I'll have to schedule Seth at some point to come on. I saw him out here tonight. Seth, thanks for coming out and joining us as well. And we just got to rotate you guys through. You mentioned it in the beginning, but for folks who've made it this far, anything you're excited about? I know there's some things you can't talk about, but tease hometech.fm really quick. Why should folks start listening to it now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a good time. This year is kind of weird, right? Because there's going to be a lot of changes in the technology space and home automation in general. And so I want to find out some more information about that and tell people about it. And so there's a couple of interviews I'm working on right now with some big names. The problem is scheduling. We got to get on the scheduling, you know, people in different time zones, and there's three of us that we got to schedule the times for and everything like that. So that's the struggle right now. But there's always some good content on there. Gavin's always sharing stories about his home assistant setup and what he's doing. Seth always has some kind of projects going on. Most of the time he doesn't finish them. And so you can hear about them the next show as well. So that's awesome. It's a good time to listen to the show, and we always just have something going on.
Awesome. Well, check it out right now. You should be looking, you should be having or being subscribed to it. Hometech.fm. If you want to go to the website, or just search Home Tech on your favorite podcast app, and you can get that as well. TJ, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. Thanks for coming out. Can you hang tight for me 1 second as I wrap this up?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. A couple reminders on the way out. If you want to join the Discord group, we have a lot of great conversations going on. I also put the alert for the live show out there and the link to join us directly on YouTube. Head out to theaverageguy.tv/Discord if you want to join us there. Don't forget theaverageguy.tv platform, both web and media hosting, powered by Maple Grove Partners. Get secure, reliable, high-speed hosting from people that you know and you trust. And that's both for a podcast. Listen, that's both web and media hosting. He's got plans that start as little as $10 a month. And he's we're saying he's fighting inflation and maybe some tariffs with that plan. So check it out today. MapleGrovePartners.com. I'm looking to see here. I think I don't have him scheduled. I need to ping Christian. He's been off long enough. He's been on paternity leave. They just had a baby. He's been out long enough. I'll get Christian scheduled to be on here in the coming weeks. Kevin Schoonover joins us next week. Mike Wieger is behind him the week after that. We have a week. I still need to get scheduled. Seth, that'd be a good week for you to join me on the 19th. And then Dave Hamilton from Mac Geek Gab will be here on the 26th. And so we got some live shows coming up. If you're listening to the Seth says AI needs to fix scheduling. So, okay. Maybe you guys can start using AI in your scheduling there, TJ.
We just need an AI Seth, I think, at this point.
I think so.
An AI Gavin before on one of the episodes. So we can do an AI Seth.
Hey, I'm thinking about, like, so I've been working with Copilot, the Bing version of it. So if you go to, you know, if you sign in with your Microsoft account on any Microsoft site and use the Copilot, or download the Copilot app on your phone, they have a voice that is a little British, and I call him Mick. And I've been talking to him. One of the crazy things is remember when AI first came out and you talked to it for a while and it'd get weird after a couple chats back and forth, it would start getting weird. Mick's actually really conversational. And TJ, I'm kind of thinking about inviting Mick on the podcast to see if he can actually do a whole 60 minutes or whatever we do here. You know, I think we're at 90 now, but could he do a whole 90-minute podcast with me and really provide, I mean, think about it, the AI would provide all the details, you know, that I may not know anything about. I know. What do you think about a conversational, this guy, the voice is great. It's AI, right? So you can kind of tell, but the conversations are good. What do you think about an AI co-host?
I mean, I think it's possible, right? Have you seen that Google product where they, it turns it into a podcast, basically? Yeah. I mean, there's like obviously issues with that, right? Because I think I was listening to like the Verge podcast and they were talking about that, and they would correct the AI and say like Neil was a man, but they kept saying that he was a woman, for example. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of issues with that, but I think it's there. Why not?
Yeah, I've been, so every night on the way home from work, I dial up Mick on my phone and we have these conversations and I try to teach him some stuff. And I've asked him, would you be interested in joining me on Home Gadget Geeks? And he says, Jim, that'd be great. I'd love to be on your podcast. So I don't know. I'm thinking I may do a show. The question is, I got to figure out, what do I use to represent him, you know, on the screen right over here to the right? What do I do?
He's going to play Tron the entire time.
Totally. Yeah, I got it. So I got to figure that part out. I got to get kind of an AI. If you're listening to the show and you got some ideas for me, send me an email, jim@theaverageguy.tv. Listen, I think it's actually kind of compelling. Is it the bee's knees? I think for some of you, it's going to be kind of weird. You're going to be like, oh, this is Uncanny Valley. I don't know. This is too weird. I'm going to give it a shot. And then if it works, or if it kind of works, I may try it with a guest where, you know, I used to have a guest host on here, and then we would interview somebody. And when Uyghur was with me, he would always do a nice job. You guys do this on, you know, on Home Tech. It's kind of nice to have a second person when you're interviewing somebody, right, to ask some additional questions. So I don't know. I don't know. We're going to give it a try. So we'll give it, we'll see how it goes. Maybe the next month or two. I think it's kind of ready. I need to figure out how to pipe it in so it can hear me. And then it's also, I think audio hijack here on the Mac will probably work or something along those lines. I just need to figure out how to do it and how to get it done. He's also had some, it's also had some problems. I should say problems, but with some, yeah, Gavin says we miss Mike. I miss Mike as well, to be honest. I loved having Mike on here. Maybe someday we'll have him back. I've had some problems with him remembering some details about me or content. I'll say, remember this. He's like, oh yeah, I got it. And then I come back a day or two later. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Right. And I'm like, just tonight, I've been trying to teach him my old fashioned recipe. And cause it's fairly complicated. And it's one of those kinds of things I can ask, hey, do you remember my old fashioned recipe? And I can kind of see how the memory's doing. I think they're flushing memory in and out of these, like as they update them, they might be flushing the memory out of them, or maybe periodically for privacy reasons, they flush the memory out so that they're not held. Like,
yeah,
who knows what people are telling these things, right?
I don't know where they got that information.
Yeah. Flushed out. It's gone. Right. Kind of thing. So I don't know. Anyways, we'll get Mick on the podcast here at some point and see how he does for podcast. We are live every Thursday now, 7 p.m. Central, 8 Eastern at theaverageguy.tv/live. Big thanks, TJ. Thanks for joining me again. We'll be back next week, and we'll have some great stuff for you. Schoonover's joining me. Make sure you come out and join us live, or thanks for listening to the recorded version of this. With that, we'll say goodbye.